and welcome to Text Talks. I'm Sharon Ferris at CEREC, the Canadian Education and Research Institute for Counseling. Thanks for joining me for this series of discussions with authors of CEREC's new Career Development Practice in Canada textbook. We're happy to bring you insights from these thought leaders in the career development field in Canada. Today, we're speaking with Roberta Knope. Roberta is president of Life Strategies Limited. Roberta is an award-winning career counselor and counselor educator. She is the co-author of the Career Engagement Model and has written many practical guides and workbooks for career practitioners and clients in transition. She is the associate dean of the Faculty of Behavioral Sciences at Yorkville University, and she divides her time between teaching, counseling coaching, researching, writing, and presentations within Canada and around the globe. Roberta's chapter in the Career Development Practice in Canada textbook looks at the theoretical foundations of career development, a topic where she brings a tremendous depth of expertise. She recently completed a term as editor of the Journal of Employment Counseling, and the final issue under her leadership was Thoughts on Theories, a compilation of new articles from authors of many of the theories referenced in her chapter in the textbook. Hello, Roberta.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here with you today, Sharon.
Well, it's great to have you. Now, for some people, Roberta, whether students or even seasoned practitioners in the field of career development, theory can be daunting. What is it that excites you about career development theory?
Such a good question, and one of the things that keeps me excited is how constantly changing it is. I was just last week at a conference in Hawaii where John Krumbholz, who I wrote about in the chapter and, you know, is one of the really big names in our field, is continuing to add to his thoughts on theories. And Dick Bowles was there. Richard Bowles is author of What Color Is Your Parachute? And it's been in countless editions over the years. And he's still adding new stuff. And so theories and models wouldn't be exciting to me at all if they were static, if what we, you know, read when we were first in school was the way they were today. But it's that constantly changing, evolving nature of them that keeps me interested.
So I want to start with the basics and what exactly is a career development theory. I read recently what I thought was a good analogy to completing a jigsaw puzzle. So just like you would need a picture to figure out the puzzle, similarly, you need a theoretical framework or model to help you figure out what a client needs. So how would you explain what a career development theory is intended to do?
Well, that's another great question. Interesting that you use the puzzle analogy, because I often bring in a jigsaw puzzle that is specially set up to illustrate this when I'm teaching a theories course. And what I do is give people pieces of the puzzle. I've pre-divided the puzzle into little sections of about 20 pieces and have those pieces in a Ziploc bag. And I give everyone in the classroom or workshop a little bag of puzzle pieces and just ask them to put them together. And it shouldn't be such a big deal because it's just a few pieces. But when they don't have any idea of the picture that they're trying to form, they don't have the big picture, it's actually quite a challenging task. And then I ask people to bring their pieces together, and they've got a little number so they know what part of the puzzle it goes in, and I have a big piece of poster board that they can start to build a puzzle. And together they see that, you know, the little piece that they saw, maybe they had an ocean, or maybe they had a garden, or maybe they had a building. They've actually formed, extrapolated from that, some broader picture that isn't at all what the big puzzle is all about. And so I think that that notion of a jigsaw is a really good analogy for working with theory. If we don't have the big picture, if we don't have a framework, if we don't have a theoretical philosophy that we're working with, we really don't know how all the pieces of information that we're getting from our clients work together or fit together. But when we start to work from a theoretical perspective, then the pieces, the little clues, the little pieces of conversation that we have with our clients start to fit into place. And we can see how this piece interrelates with this other piece here, and it starts to make sense. So a theoretical framework, or what's more common for career practitioners to use, is a model, not necessarily a full-blown theory. But those frameworks and models allow us to work really effectively and efficiently with our clients and have a place to make sense of the pieces of information that they bring our way.
So clearly these theories or models are essential for career practitioners, but at the same time, there's recent research that's shown that some career development practitioners don't consider the use of theories as being important to their practice, or they don't feel well equipped to draw from a theoretical framework when working with their clients. Why do you think there's this reluctance?
It's fascinating, Sharon, and part of some research that we actually did ourselves last year where we were asking people about whether they were using theories and models, and we got some of the oddest responses, like, oh, I don't have time to explain a theory to my clients. And we're thinking, wow, that's not really the point of a theory. You don't sit down and explain it to your clients, but you use it yourself as a practitioner or counselor as an explanatory framework for the work that you're doing with the client. So a couple of things come to mind. One is that, as you know, we're a field that has collected professionals from a variety of backgrounds. And that's one of the things that's delightful about our field and makes it very rich and even interesting for us as colleagues. But it means that we haven't all come from the same training background, so we're not necessarily exposed to the same theories. In some provinces in Canada, there's certification in place now, not in all, but many of those programs that have certification have required a course in career theories and a course in ethics as part of the foundational background. And beyond that, many people have been grandfathered into the field because of the work that they've done. So they've acquired certification, but through a grandfathering process. And so we know that many of the people that are grandfathered have had at least one course in theories and models, but in some cases, those were mandated courses. They weren't really courses that people saw as integrating into their practice. It was just something that they had to do, they had to complete in order to be eligible for a certification. And so I'm thinking that perhaps having learned about theories or read about theories out of context might be part of the problem. Perhaps not having use them in a supervised or applied way might also be part of the problem. And perhaps it might be having learned theories, but learned theories perhaps in isolation of putting them into practice, like not really seeing how they apply to our everyday work might be a third part of the problem. But it's a bit of a puzzle because we know that many people in our field have been exposed to theories and not all of them find them a useful addition to their work.
Could it also be the case, Roberta, that practitioners are applying the theories but don't actually know it?
Definitely that's part of it. Certainly in my own practice, that was the case where I'd been working in the field for 16 years before I started to take formal training as I began my master's in counseling program. And so when I was first exposed to the theories course that I was in, I thought, oh, wow, that's why we use the self-directed search, for example. It fits with Holland's theory, or that's why we talk about life roles. It fits with Super's theory. So I was definitely using bits and pieces in my practice that had been built into my programs, but I didn't necessarily understand how they all hung together. And I think in some ways that's a bit dangerous because we're building programs that have been modified over the years and lose some of the theoretical sense that they may have had in the beginning. Just a quick example with assessment tools, I've talked to people that have, you know, told me, oh, I've replaced the strong interest inventory, which obviously is a measure of interest, with the Myers-Briggs because it fits better with the work that we're doing with personality dimensions and type focus. And so what's happened is people have removed an interest inventory, replaced it with a personality measure that is actually measuring the same type of personality type as what another tool was already measuring. So of course they fit together nicely because you're really measuring the same thing with three different tools. But there's not necessarily a theoretical sense or a holistic sense to why those assessments were chosen or what we're trying to measure. So I think it is really important to back up and take a look at the theory behind the tools that we're using and the approaches that we're using.
Now, you've just mentioned a few theories by name, and I wanted to take a deeper dive there. In the textbook, you begin by discussing some of the earliest career development theories, such as Parsons' trait factor theory and Holland's theory of vocational types. So these are theories that focus on matching people to jobs by comparing personal characteristics to job requirements. So for example, if you're good with tools, that could match with a career in construction. Is this kind of approach still relevant today?
The answer, I think, is somewhat. So it's still helpful to understand someone's interests or the stage that they're at in life in order to match them to careers. The challenge with it is that most of the interest inventories that people are using are representing only a really narrow range of potential occupations. And so a client who completes an interest inventory and a few occupations are suggested may begin to believe that those are the only occupations that would be suitable. We all know how quickly the world of work is changing, and the work that we're doing today, for example, even me doing this podcast for you, is not something that we would have conceived of 10 years ago. And so when people are engaging in career exploration, but perhaps the occupations of today, or more importantly, the occupations of tomorrow that may not have even been invented yet, are not being suggested, then we may not be really helping people prepare for the work that really needs doing or the work that they would be perfectly suited to do. So the notion of matching is not completely out of date. In my own career, it's helpful for me to understand that I really like working with people, and so I look for occupations that allow me to do that. I have a real entrepreneurial piece to who I am, so it's nice to have occupations that allow me to lead and explore. But it's not helpful if we rely on that exclusively, and we think that it's going to be very easy in the complex world that we're living in today to perfectly match someone to a career.
So it continues to bring some value, but it's not the complete answer.
Absolutely.
So continuing on in your chapter in the textbook, Roberta, you go on to describe the continuing popularity of Super's life stages approach, especially when counseling members of age-related cohorts, such as recent graduates, mid-career changers, or those considering retirement. And so I'm thinking he's published close to 40 years ago now, but you write that he was ahead of his time. Why is that?
I think one of the things that Super brought to our field is the notion of the importance, the salience of various life roles, and that those life roles are interconnected and that they impact our careers. I think prior to that, we sort of thought about life roles quite separately, if we thought about them at all. So, you know, you will have heard stories from older members of your family, for example, who perhaps didn't have the opportunity to go to university because as a woman, you're going to get married and have babies, and so why would you bother investing in education? And we know that today people's life roles are much more interconnected, that people may have a baby while they're in university, they may return to a professional career, they may interrupt a professional career well into its establishment phase and have a child at that point, or they may interrupt a career to perform some elder care responsibilities to take care of older members of their family. So we're now recognizing how interconnected various life roles are and how important it is to take into account somebody's entire life context when we're helping them plan careers or plan shifts in their careers. And that was something that Super introduced, and then Sunny Hansen picked up on, and around the same time Ed Colosi was coined the term career life, actually. And so people 30-40 years ago were beginning to see how complex our lives were and how it didn't make sense to have career conversations in absence of life conversations.
So it's how the career is interacting with larger environmental and social factors.
And that each role we play is part of our career. So, you know, my role as a mom and even my role as a grandma is part of my career. It's part of what I do. It's how I'm contributing to the world. And my work role, my paid role, is just a small part of what I do.
Excellent. Now, many new theories and models have emerged over the past few years, and many of these are being driven by the changes in the world of work that you referred to. So how can some of these newer theories, such as Krumbholz's happenstance theory or Brighton Pryor's chaos theory, help career development professionals today better support their clients?
Well, I think the real innovation of the theories that you've mentioned, happenstance and chaos theory, is the recognition that change happens, that we're living in a constantly evolving world, and that we are not going to be able to carefully script a career or manage our careers. And those are terms that we used before. We talked about career management and career planning. And now I think we're acknowledging and recognizing that the economy, our own personal health, changes in the environment, changes in our local workplace, all of those impact what's going to happen in our work role. And so the nice thing about happenstance theory or chaos is that acknowledgement of change. And it doesn't mean that we just put our hands up in the air and say, as a career practitioner, well, I have no idea how to help you because the world of work is changing. That's certainly not helpful as a career practitioner. But instead, we can help our clients with some of the soft skills, like building resiliency, like navigating transition, like responding to a changing economy. So those kinds of skills that we can develop in our clients will give them a sense of control in a very rapidly changing world of work. If we can equip people to respond and even take advantage of some of the unusual opportunities that come their way, then those are very proactive things that as career practitioners or career counselors we can be doing. And we wouldn't even start to think about that if we weren't influenced by theories like chaos or happenstance.
So on the theme of change, another aspect of change is the increasing diversity of our Canadian workplaces. So I'm wondering what a theory like Arthur and Collins's culture-infused counseling can tell us about the cultural beliefs of career development professionals themselves and how this might impact their practice.
Again, 15, 20 years ago, these aren't even conversations that we would have been having. There really wasn't a lot of acknowledgement of diversity or cultural competency, for instance, when I was being trained as a counselor. Partly, this is impacted by the increasing diversity of Canada, although Canada has always been a country that has been built on diversity, but partly it's also our awareness of how biases and assumptions that counselors bring to their work are really creating or contributing to sometimes some very inappropriate interventions with our clients. So an example that just quickly comes to mind would be, I couldn't tell you the number of times that a counselor or a career practitioner has said to me, oh, sometimes interfering parents bring their kids to our center, but we make the parents sit out in the hallway and we, you know, really want to empower the youth and speak to them individually. And just that statement alone is really indicating the bias of a very, you know, Western trained professional and perhaps Western raised professional who would come from a very individualistic approach to career development rather than someone who's part of a collectivist culture and would really see the influence of family and the importance of family and community, and sometimes in the First Nations community, the elders in the community, to someone's career decision, that career decisions are made from a collectivist set of values where someone is going to do the work that needs to be doing or that will contribute to filling a gap in the family business or whatever. So it's really important for us to make sure that career practitioners and counselors understand the influence of their own culture and how that's formed their thoughts and beliefs about career and how that's going to permeate the work that they do with clients. It's also really important for us to have an understanding of culture so that we can adjust our approaches to be culturally appropriate for the various clients that we're working with. A lot of people want a very prescriptive set of rules. They want to know, how do I work with, I'll hear the term, how do I work with an Asian client? My goodness, Asia is a continent. There are so many different cultures, even within a single country. in Asia. For instance, if I do work within Jakarta in Indonesia, there are hundreds of cultural groups represented just within that one region of one country of the continent Asia. So for us to think that there is one way to work with our Asian clients, or Asian clients typically do this or typically do that, is just really representing a lack of understanding of the complexity of the cultures, the many, many cultures that are influencing a client that we might meet that has come from Asia. And so when we're working from a culturally competent or a culturally infused approach, instead of trying to memorize a bunch of rules, what we're doing is recognizing that I'm bringing culture, I'm bringing many layers of culture, my age, my educational level, my ethnic background, my spiritual beliefs, all of those are influencing who I am and what I bring to this meeting. And then I'm also recognizing the complexity of the culture of the client that I'm working with. And together we'll navigate some interventions and some approaches to thinking about careers that are going to be appropriate for the client within the culture and the context that he or she is currently living.
That sounds like some very practical and helpful guidance right there. Now, Roberta, you've developed several of your own theories that relate to the constantly changing environment and its effect on individual career choice. Can you tell us a bit about your work on career responsiveness?
Sure. I need to be honest at this point, though, and say that my work is not necessarily creating theories, but probably more appropriately models or frameworks. So I tend to use metaphors, somewhat like Norm Amundsen, in order to conceptualize what I'm trying to explain to a client. So when I first started to think about career responsiveness, it was in direct reaction to the language we were using around management. We had career management workshops and courses and activities and books. And the notion of management to me seemed too formed at the time, like too set in stone, where the idea of responsiveness seemed more organic to me. And I thought about someone who was perhaps going down a river on a raft, on a log raft, and had very little control over what they did. And that would be very different than a more responsive boat, like a kayak. And if someone's kayaking down a river, they have the ability to stop and start as they need to. They have the ability to maneuver a little bit and go up some of the side little rivers that they see, or little creeks, and to explore. And so that notion of career responsiveness to me is giving someone the kayak and the paddles so that they're going to be able to navigate their career more effectively and respond to the economy. I was doing a lot of work with downsizing in the 90s, and that's when I coined that term, because we need to respond to the fact that we've suddenly been laid off, or that a whole industry has disappeared, or that a new industry is emerging. And so responsiveness is a little bit more realistic, I think, than thinking that we can manage our careers and plan everything out lockstep from the time we finish high school until the time that we might eventually retire.
So whether it's the 90s or 2014, I think that notion of career agility remains just as true now.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, the panel that you hosted, Thoughts on Theories, at the National Career Development Association conference last year, I understand was filled beyond capacity. And I can also tell you that the Career Theory Wiki on our contactpoint.ca online community is one of the most highly visited sections of the website. So how do you explain this interest in theory, especially since we've just noted it isn't always integrated into practice?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that part of the interest in that panel that you're talking about, and I'm doing something very similar later this week at an Alberta conference, and then also at the IAVG conference coming up in Quebec. And so this notion of bringing theorists together to talk about their theories is really popular. And I think one of the things is the big names. I think that, you know, if you manage to get, you know, Jim Bright and John Krumbholz, Nancy Arthur, Norm Amundsen together in a room, then people are going to come. And part of that reason is that the people who have contributed theories and models are also the people that are writing in our field. And there are people that are shown on videos or, you know, interviewed in podcasts like this. And so I think that's part of it, that the people that have thought about theory, that have actually gone beyond practice and, you know, come up with some kind of an organizational framework or conceptual framework for working with clients, are the people that have been around for a while and that have written a lot and that we're just interested in meeting in person or engaging with them. So I think that's part of it. But I think there's also a craving to have that explanation that makes sense. If we're working without theory, we're kind of floundering and there's a bit of a hit and miss randomness to our work. And I think that when we hear people who actually understand why it is somebody's doing what they're doing, or why it is that somebody's career is, you know, working in the way it is, or why it is a particular intervention is going to be useful under certain circumstances, I think we're just naturally really impressed, and that resonates with us because we crave that understanding when we're working with a client so that we can work with them less randomly and more effectively.
So you're talking about this craving for understanding. So to get very specific for a moment, what would you say then are some of the first steps that career professionals can take to ensure that they are applying career theory into their everyday work practice?
Well, I think a really basic first step is learning a little bit about theory. And so I'm hoping that the chapter that I provided in the book with the conceptual framework around it is helpful for people and helps them make sense and understand why some of the theories were developed and how they still apply today. I think as well it's important to have conversations. When we're engaging at a program development level, for example, the Blueprint for Life Work Designs is a really wonderful conceptual framework that can help us understand where the work that we're doing fits into some kind of an overall holistic look at somebody's career development or the interventions that might help them with their careers. And so I think that if we bring theory into those kinds of very practical conversations when we're asked to redesign a program or contribute to a proposal, or when we are reflecting on the client that we just saw and we're writing case notes and we're trying to think about how to work effectively with them going forward, we might pause and reflect, how do I understand this person from a theoretical perspective? Do I see the issue that they're dealing with as something to do with developmental stages in life, perhaps something to do with the complexity of their life roles and they're needing to downshift because now they've got some complex family responsibilities because a spouse has just been diagnosed with cancer, for example? Do I see my work with them as largely unpacking a mismatch? Has someone ended up in a career that's just really not a good fit for who they are in terms of their personality and their values and so on? Once I can conceptualize what's going on from a theoretical framework, those theories give me some clues to effective interventions that will help the client move forward much more seamlessly.
So finally, Roberta, as we know, theory is something that is constantly evolving. So I wanted to ask you as we wrap up, where do you see career development theory going next? What's really needed in the field?
It's so hard to foresee what changes might happen because I personally would never have foreseen some of the changes that have happened in the last 10 years. But I think what we need in the field are more practitioners that become scientist practitioners, that engage with us in research, that take the research and academic side of our work more seriously. And we're seeing that. We're seeing far more people now with master's degrees and PhDs in the field than certainly when I entered it 40 years ago. And we're seeing more opportunities to collaborate and more opportunities. The work that you do at CEREC is just absolutely phenomenal in supporting research and supporting people to think about their theories and move them forward. So I think that's really important. I think we'll continue to see theories that address complexity. I can't see our lives getting simpler anytime soon, although many of us might wish for that. I think that we'll see theories that continue to look at the importance of diversity and recognizing, perhaps borrowing work from other countries and other cultures. I'm seeing much more now at an international level. I just came back from an Asia Pacific conference, and I'm heading off to an international conference on careers. And so I'm seeing much more a recognition that countries that maybe haven't used the term career and haven't had a formal area of counseling practice related to career have still had work going on for a very long time and have had lots of cultural conceptions of work and the role of work. And so we're starting to invite and welcome and learn from people who are bringing in their understanding of career from other cultures. And I think that's going to be exciting going forward.
Well, thank you so much, Roberta, for this thoughtful discussion on career development theory and for making theory so accessible. We've, of course, only skimmed the surface of this topic, and there are many theories we haven't even been able to touch on. But you can read more in Roberta's chapter in the new CEREC textbook, Career Development Practice in Canada. You can find out how to get your copy at www.cerec.ca. And be sure to join us for upcoming text talks with other leading contributors to the textbook. I'm Sharon Ferris for CEREC. Thank you all for listening.